May it please the court, Stephen Kirsch on behalf of the appellant, Robert Legg. Submit that this case is governed by United States versus Burroughs, which was decided by this court in 2010. And just in comparing this case to Burroughs, I would just emphasize a few factors. Burroughs was a far, far more egregious case than this case. In Burroughs, there was far more deviance involved than what occurred in this case. In Burroughs, there was
a computer wasn't used, right?
Well, a computer was not used, and then I will get to that point in the argument where I talk about what Judge Catelli's findings were, and that I might as well.
I agree. I agree with your basic point, though. It is a far more egregious offense.
You had an actual victim in Burroughs, and you also had a person who used a position of authority.
But the theory of this whole line of cases has been use of the computer in the crime, and the Sentencing Commission has spoken to that as well, as you know.
That's correct.
And that's what we have to try to sort through.
That's correct. And I go back to what Judge Catelli, her remarks on the record. She said the decision to meet regarding the defendant was made, and the police officer, was made on the computer. But that was it. As she pointed out, she said the arrangements and everything else, the meat of the offense, are on the telephone. And then she added that the calculation does not include the enhancement for the computer. The computer was only used to initiate the contact. It was not used to make out any of the elements of the offense. So, and I appreciate and understand what the court is saying, that in Burroughs you didn't have a person actually using a computer, but the theory is the same, is that the trial judge imposed a specific condition of release that really was not related to this offense.
Well, it was related. This is certainly relevant conduct. There wouldn't have been an offense if there hadn't been the computer in the first place, right?
There wouldn't have, but again, the computer was simply used to initiate the conduct and to make contact with the police officer, and there was obviously some deviant conversations on the computer.
The standard the district court's applying is reasonable relationship, and our standard is abuse of discretion. Right? That's a highly deferential combination there.
Yes, I agree with that. And I would just submit to the court that in this instance, all of the criminal conduct occurred on the telephone. Even the government acknowledged that after the initial contact via the computer, there were text messages going back and forth, and then all of the remaining contact occurred over the telephone, where they were making the arrangements to meet. And that's where the criminality occurred, is during that period of time when they were making the arrangements to meet to complete the crime.
Can I ask what our standard of review actually is here? Your claim on appeal is that the totality of the three or four, however you count them, restrictions are unreasonable, right? But that wasn't the argument that was made below. The argument that was made below was just the one, that is the complaint about the fact that he would be limited to one non-work device, right?
Right.
So doesn't that puts us in plain error territory, doesn't it?
Well, obviously I've thought a lot about that. And the trial counsel did make a specific objection as to the court's limitation on the number of computers, and the government acknowledges that. After that,
you're not objecting to that one by itself. Your objection is to the
totality.
Right?
That's correct. Breaking them down as to the second and third, the permission and the monitoring. And I scoured the record trying to find some reference that the trial counsel made to an objection, but he did not make an objection specifically to those two limitations. And again, I have said my position is that Burroughs is controlling, and I acknowledge that. Burroughs also dealt with the issue of abuse of discretion and plain error, and found that if you don't make a specific objection at sentencing as to a specific condition, then you're dealing with the plain error standard. So on that point, as to conditions two and three, I have to concede that this court is dealing with a plain error standard. But I would also submit that the sentence far exceeded, under 18 U.S.C. 3553, what was necessary.
When you say as to two and three, it's plain error, but you're not making a one-by-one claim. You're making a claim as to the totality. So a claim that the totality was unreasonable would be subject to plain error.
Well, but I am breaking them down individually, and I'm saying that given that there was this restriction that was objected to regarding the defendant's ability to use more than one computer, that I would submit, and I have submitted, that is subject to an abuse of discretion standard, because that's separated out, as I've tried to separate them out, and as I believe trial counsel tried to separate them out, because that's the one specific condition that he made a specific objection to.
I thought you had objected to all three, and so if one of them is okay, but two of them aren't, or two of them are okay and one of them isn't, is that right?
Well, I have objected to all three.
Okay.
But I am acknowledging that one is viewed under an abuse of discretion standard.
That one. And then the other two that weren't objected to
is plain error. I really don't say that I have any choice given Burroughs and my position regarding Burroughs that it is controlling. And I also point out that the government in its sentencing memorandum did not ask for a computer enhancement. Trial Judge Catelli did not apply a computer enhancement. She specifically rejected the computer enhancement. So it seems that from the record, from how she viewed this case, that she did not view us as a computer-related crime. Clearly, the computer was used to start the process, but the criminal behavior that brought the defendant before the court was accomplished through the use of the telephone. And
can I just ask, on the one device thing, she says in the sentencing colloquy that if he pays for it, then maybe he can have more. So does that mean that if you want to have more than one device, you can come back in?
I believe so, if he had the resources, but there's nothing in the record that suggests that this defendant would have the resources. He was declared indigent.
The pay for it part is to pay for the monitoring?
The monitoring.
Pay for the monitoring.
That's correct. So I believe I used my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. David Rybicki for Appellee of the United States. This Court should affirm the computer-related restrictions imposed by the District Court for two reasons. The first reason is that all three conditions are reasonably related to the factors set forth in Section 3553. And the second reason is that none of the factors deprive appellant of any more of his liberty than is necessary to effectuate those factors.
Can I ask you about the standard of review? I said, I read their defendant's opening brief as being an attack on the totality, not on each one separately. And therefore, there really being only one claim, that all of them together were unreasonable, and that claim was not made below, and therefore that claim would be subject to plain error. What is your view about this? Your view seems to be what, that everything is subject to plain error except for the single device, or what?
Correct, Your Honor. Below, the only objection that was preserved was relative to the single device restriction. The other conditions that are on appeal were characterized by appellant's trial counsel as pretty standard in cases like this. There was no objection lodged as to any of those. So the government's position is that plain error applies only to the preserved objection as to the single device.
I don't see a distinction, though, between one-by-one individual contentions and a totality contention. I mean, if all they are raising on appeal is the totality exception, then there's only a totality objection, then there's only one standard of review, which is plain error. We would have to look at the various elements of the totality, but there would only be plain error. If we look at that one-by-one, then it would be abuse of discretion for the single device and plain error for the others.
Correct, Your Honor. My understanding of appellant's brief was not that he was raising a totality argument. He certainly didn't do that below. But if that's his position on appeal, then plain error applies to his totality argument. And the conditions do work together, of course. They're related. The pre-approval condition is obviously something that comes before the monitoring condition. If the probation office doesn't deem that appellant may have access to an internet capable device, then the monitoring condition and the single device conditions don't come into play. So obviously there are certain conditions that logically must precede other conditions, but in terms of
what happens if we very soon come to a world where you can't get a telephone that isn't a internet capable?
Your Honor, this Court has recognized that technology in this area develops quickly. It did so in Love. And the probation office, in terms of the conditions that Judge Kohler-Cotelli imposed here, was given that flexibility. Judge Kohler-Catelli did not specify the particular technological or logistical methods by which monitoring would be accomplished. Obviously, that develops as technology develops.
I'm not talking about the monitor. I'm talking about the single device.
I think it's conceivable if in a hypothetical future where telephones...
Not very hypothetical, isn't it?
It's correct, Your Honor. The probation office may well have technology that enables them to disable the internet capacity of a telephone.
I see. What about the possibility of modifying the condition if it turns out that that's not available?
So long as the district court retains jurisdiction over the case, and it does during the entire 15-year period of supervised release, appellant may go back to the district court and say that because of changes in technology or changes in conditions or the fact that he got a job that requires his use of more than one computer or whatever circumstances have changed.
I understood that the one device requirement does not apply to work computers.
It's a global requirement, Your Honor. It would apply, it would limit him to possession.
It says personal. The restriction doesn't say, I thought there was actually a footnote on this somewhere specifically, but the restriction is to...
Your Honor, at the transcript 36 and 37 in the sentencing transcript, the district court...
You are limited to possessing only one personal internet capacity. It doesn't say anything about what you could use, what your device provided by work might be.
And in that event, Your Honor, he would be permitted a device at work.
Do you read it the same way that I do?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Do you read it the same way that I do?
Your Honor, Judge Kohler-Catelli started by saying, you shall not possess or use a computer or have any access to any online device without prior approval. And she specified only one device, so...
I'm looking at the judgment.
Your Honor, Judge Kohler-Catelli made clear that she would, as essentially an act of judicial grace, allow him one device free of cost. And the cost associated there is the cost to the probation office of monitoring.
No, I'm looking at the special conditions of supervision. Number 3. You are limited to possessing only one personal internet capacity or some other electronic device. I understood that as meaning that that was not a limitation if he were able to get a job that required him to use a work computer, that wouldn't count.
That is.
Does it have to be internet capable?
It does, Your Honor.
I don't think the judgment was all that clear on it.
On page 36 of the transcript, Judge Kohler.
The transcript is one thing, but what Judge Garland just read doesn't indicate that it has to be internet capable.
Well, it's number 3, which says only one personal internet capacity or some other electronic device with internet capacity.
And I think that would preclude a computer that's not connected to the internet. If he wants to do his taxes on the computer or, you know, use his computer for any purpose that has no connectivity, he's free to do that. And that distinguishes this case from Russell, for example, in which this court found substantively unreasonable a 30-year blanket restriction on possession of any computer for any reason for the entire period of supervised release. So this condition clearly is reasonable within the 3553 factors in a way that Russell was not. If I can...
What about the point that it's odd to not allow conditions in a case like Burroughs and to allow them in a case like this? How do you square that?
In light of Section 3553 and the Sentencing Commission's policy in Section 5D1.3, when a computer is used in the case, the Sentencing Commission uses the phrase, in cases in which the defendant used such items, meaning a computer or interactive computer service. And 3553, of course, addresses nature and circumstances. Burroughs had absolutely no nexus to a computer whatsoever. He met the victim in his capacity as her sports coach. His computer was searched by...
Obviously, the government there wanted the restrictions.
It did. And the government's argument there
is very logical in a crime of the sort that took place in Burroughs to want to preclude that kind of use of the computer in the future, because once a sexual molester of children, the computer is going to facilitate that in the future, presumably.
That was the government's argument.
Even internet capable is too broad, isn't it? I mean, the defendant doesn't argue this, but I just for my own satisfaction, that's not what the judge must have meant. It's capable of communicating with other individuals. There's plenty of devices that are internet capable, but you can't communicate with individuals. For example, television sets that play through a Blu-ray box connect to the internet and bring you movies and Netflix and all the rest of that stuff. But that doesn't, and the way this is written would prohibit him from having that because it's internet capable. But that's not what she possibly could have meant, right?
I think that that's what the district court meant, Your Honor. If for whatever reason, and I understand, and today computers are fairly ubiquitous. They're in televisions, they're in your telephone, and a lot of those computers allow internet connectivity. The threat here that the district court crafted these
was communicating, right?
Yes, the threat was allowing a supervisee who has these proclivities access to the internet where very quickly, and it's hackneyed to say it, but it's true, with the click of a button or just a few clicks, he can be back in the world where he is contacting people who he's asking to procure children for him.
But what my point out, though, is that there are devices that connect to the internet, but you can't communicate with other individuals. And the example that comes to my mind is are the Blu-ray players use in television. You can connect to the internet, but you can't communicate with other people.
I personally don't know how a Blu-ray works. The court's order here, though, is directed at communication.
Well, that's right. That's my point. That saying internet capable is too broad. It's communications.
I think the most reasonable reading, Your Honor, again, because computers are everywhere in your telephone, there might well be refrigerators nowadays that have a computer that connect to the internet for updates or software updates. Cars may do that even. I think
home security devices is another.
Home security devices. Yeah. The clear import of the district court's order and the conditions are computers that are connected to the internet, a personal computer device, whether it's a handheld device or a laptop computer. It wouldn't implicate other computers that are not in personal devices, that may be in cars or televisions, that may connect to the internet but would not enable two-way communication between human beings. I think that's the only reasonable reading of the district court's conditions. They're not entirely explicit on what constitutes a computer. The term computer is not defined, but I think in the context and reading them fairly, it means personal computers.
I think a district court could ban use of a telephone.
Well, if the telephone doesn't connect to the internet, certainly it could not. If it's a handheld device, then that connects to the internet and would allow.
I mean, one that does not connect, just generally because a telephone's used in a health facility.
Generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a much more difficult question.
Why is that more difficult?
Well, I think that a telephone is, in general, more basic to modern life than a computer is in a lot of respects.
Not sure about that.
There aren't public computers. There are public, well, I guess there's no public telephones anymore, are there? The district court, I think, could well restrict telephones that have access to the internet. And in Judge Garland's hypothetical, and I think it's quite reasonable to surmise that in the future all telephones will have internet, and I'm sure the probation office will craft its conditions and its monitoring capabilities such that those capabilities are disabled in a telephone that could be used by someone for unlawful or inappropriate purpose.
But in Judge Kavanaugh's hypothetical, where you have a phone that's not internet capable, the Sentencing Commission has not listed that as one of the possible limitations, as it has listed computers, right?
I don't believe the use of a telephone in the commission of a crime is a sentencing condition that the
during this 15-year period. I'm sorry.
It's not in the list, which is
in
5D1.3, conditions of supervised release.
Those are computer conditions.
There's no, huh?
Those are computer conditions, I believe.
Yes, a condition limiting the use of a computer or an interactive computer service in cases in which the defendant used such items.
Yes.
There's no mention of telephones.
No.
Except that are not computer capable. So if a district court were to do that, they would be acting, of course,
They have the
Maybe they can act outside the guidelines.
They have the discretion. They don't have to follow the guidelines.
Right, but they wouldn't get any benefit from our in our norm.
Well, 5D1 relates to computers. There may, I do not know whether or not there are independent sections that address use of a telephone in terms of other crimes. But as Judge Kavanaugh observed, the district court, so long as any term of supervised release is reasonable, connected to the nature and circumstances of the crime, and doesn't deprive appellants of more liberty than is reasonably necessary to effectuate the purposes of 3553.
During the 15-year period, that's the period of is 15 years, wasn't it?
180 months, Your Honor, correct.
You said that the judge can ease the restrictions in light of developing technology. Can the judge increase the restrictions?
Your Honor, so long as the district court retains jurisdiction over the case, she could. If, for whatever reason, the government or the probation office decided that these conditions were inappropriate or because of the development of technology or other circumstances were, with the course of time, rendered inappropriate or, for whatever reason, were insufficient, then the district court could modify those conditions so long as she retains jurisdiction over the case. And, as I said, if appellant has a job that requires him, or for whatever reason he wants to have two or three devices, he can afford them, he can pay for the monitoring, he can come back before the district court to ask her to modify the one device limitation.
The government sometimes seeks categorical internet bans, correct?
In this case, it did not, Your Honor.
No, does it sometimes, though?
It did in Burroughs, certainly.
And what's the dividing line for the government on when it's going to seek a categorical ban and when it...
Well, it's obvious. I think it's a fact-based inquiry, Your Honor. And this court has drawn a legal dividing line, however, in Love. Mm-hmm. This court recognized there are generally two kinds of cases. Cases, on the one hand, that involve child pornography or merely the transmission or receipt of child pornography, and on the other hand, cases that involve victims or potential victims. And cases that involve potential victims have more severe consequences of harm to those victims. In such cases, this circuit in Love and many other circuits, the 9th, the 11th, the 7th, the 5th, the 8th, and the 2nd, have all held that when a real victim is at stake, that a categorical internet ban or a conditional ban that requires permission from the probation office is appropriate. So, for example, the Second Circuit in Johnson applied what it called an absolute internet ban, given the particularly egregious...
I was just curious why it wasn't sought here. Or are you saying that the probation office condition... Because the probation office here could deny...
Yes, Your Honor.
...complete use of the internet, right?
Yes, that's the pre-approval condition. Mm-hmm. If the probation office decides that the protection of the public or deterrence or appellant's course of treatment and therapy warrants a complete prohibition on the internet, it can do that under these terms. And if appellant's treatment develops such that the probation office believes he's capable of using the internet without reoffending, then they can permit access with monitoring on one device, on one personal device. In child pornography cases, however, the circuits are in agreement that child pornography and the threats and the harms that child pornography creates are insufficient as a general matter to allow district courts to impose categorical internet bans. And the Second Circuit discussed that in Sofsky and discussed Johnson also. Johnson was an actual victim case. Sofsky was a child pornographer case. So those are the three bans at stake, Your Honor, the single device condition, the pre-approval condition, the monitoring condition. The court has no further questions. The government would respectfully request that the court affirm all of those conditions of supervised release. Thank you.
Does Mr. Kirsch have any more time?
Yep. Just briefly to pick up on the categorical approach. To begin with, there was no child pornography in this case, and the judge made that finding very clear on the record. And that the government has repeatedly...
This case is worse, child pornography case, right?
Well, no, because nothing was transmitted over the internet.
No, but there's a victim. The use of the computer and the internet to facilitate actual abuse of a child.
That's theoretically, but there was no actual victim.
Not viewing alone.
Right. Well, but the government continued in its brief, it cited Love as being dispositive of this issue, and an argument that the United States continues to cite Love, but Love was a much different case than this case. And also, Love, like Burroughs, was a much more egregious case. And Love is the case where you had a defendant using the internet over a period of 9 months and developing a plan to harm a child, and this was an ongoing relationship. And in Love, which is a specific distinction from this case, in Love, the trial court found that the defendant was likely to repeat the behavior that he was convicted of. And I would submit to the court that is a critical distinction between what we have here, and that Judge Catelli did not make findings.
Isn't that an assumption undergirding her decision?
Well,
that is quite reasonable in these circumstances.
I don't know if it's quite reasonable. I don't know. I don't think there was any basis for a judge to make a finding that the person is likely to repeat.
Well, the Sentencing Commission has studied this and obviously thinks it's reasonable.
Right, but in this case, the United States did not make that argument in its sentencing memorandum. They did not come before the court and said, this person's likely to repeat this behavior. Mm-hmm. And the judge did not make that finding. Mm-hmm. And I would submit to the court that is very significant because Judge Catelli's opinion and her conditions are so broad as to be very unfair and as to not be in compliance with the conditions under 18 United States Code 3553.
Can I ask you, what's the difference between this case and Lori's with respect to the way in which the computer was involved in the offense?
Well, I think that in Lori's there was more contact on the computer.
But in the end, it was a telephone conversation.
In the end, but the contacts were a combination. And here I believe that the judge really did make the finding that the computer access was simply to initiate.
But why does that matter? In Lori's we said, Lori's used the internet to facilitate criminal sexual conduct with minors. And the word is facilitate. They're both the same offense, traveling across interstate lines.
That's correct.
If you don't make the initial contact, you don't get anywhere. So why isn't that facilitating? Why isn't there facilitating? And that wasn't the offense in Lori's either, but the word facilitate is just make it more easy to happen. Isn't it the same?
Well, and again, I simply have to go back to what Judge Catelli found, her findings was that the computer was a very minor part of the offense.
Well, that's a but-for part of the offense, though.
There's no question. She did find his money, and it was her terminology. She said the meat of the offense occurred over the telephone, and that's where the plan was established, and that's where the plan was initiated, but that's where the plan was cemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kirsch, you were appointed by the court. We appreciate very much your assistance in this matter.